In World War II, 200,000 British troops and 140,000 French, Dutch, and Belgian allies were caught on the beaches of France early in the war before the rapidly advancing tank battalions of the Nazis. And they had no way to escape. They were just stuck on the beaches, and World War II was about to be over just as it had really got started, and Britain was about to lose their entire army. At the time, King George VI called the nation to pray and fast. And then weird things started happening. Hitler told his tank battalions to stop advancing. And historians are real divided over why he did this. Some were like, well, he was afraid to lose them in the swampy ground, or maybe he was afraid of them having a counterattack and getting behind. We don't know why, but he told the tanks to stop advancing. A low cloud bank rolled out over the beaches of France that prevented the German Air Force from strafing the stranded soldiers. And the English Channel between France and England became unusually calm, allowing thousands of ordinary fishing boats and private boats to cross the channel, and ended up rescuing 340,000 soldiers. Newspapers at the time called it the Miracle at Dunkirk. Maybe you've seen the Christopher Nolan movie? Yeah, Christopher Nolan. He's one of my favorite directors. Love him. At the time, though, they called it the Miracle at Dunkirk. And the people of Britain believed that by praying and fasting, they had changed the course of the war. They changed the course of history. Had the British army been defeated there, then the Nazis would have quickly swept over Great Britain, and World War II would have gone very differently. In fact, Nazi Germany may have swept over the entire earth. But people prayed, and they fasted. And yet, for most of us in the West, fasting hasn't been a major focus of our Christian traditions. Growing up in churches, I never heard about fasting. I remember one time there was a little boy who had leukemia, and someone in the church called us to pray and fast for him. That was the only time in my, 20 years of growing up in evangelical churches that I ever heard anything about fasting. Somewhere between the days of Jesus and now, we've quietly set aside fasting. Sometime between even the 1940s, when they prayed and fasted in Great Britain, and now, we've lost sight of how powerful praying and fasting can be. Does anybody know Google's motto when they were founded? Does anybody know what their motto was? It was, "Don't be evil." That was literally their corporate motto. It was core wall in Google. It was part of their code of conduct. "Don't be evil" was their driving core value. However, after exploding in growth and becoming the most powerful conglomerate of search engines, that it is today, it quietly dropped the motto in 2015. And if you just Google, Google scandals, all of them have been from 2015 on. It's interesting. Is it any wonder that scandals have plagued Google ever since? In fact, if you search on negative news articles about Google, did you know Google hides those from you? It doesn't show you all those if you search on a different search engine. They collect all kinds of data they're not supposed to collect on you, and they share it with the government. There's all kinds of scandalous things about Google, but all that's been since 2015 when they quietly got rid of the motto, "Don't be evil." So you say, "Alex, why are you telling me this? What does this have to do with our series on prayer?" Because it's easy to look at something and say, you know what, where I am right now, that doesn't work for me anymore. I've grown beyond that. I don't need that anymore. That's old-fashioned and silly, and we can drop it. And that's what Google said. They're like, "Don't be evil. We're too big to worry about something like that. We need to focus on getting bigger and focusing on not being evil. We can just drop that." But I think a lot of us have felt that same way about prayer and about fasting, especially. Where I'm at right now, that doesn't really work for me. I've grown beyond that. I don't really need that. I can do some other things. I don't need to pray and fast. But imagine if the people of Britain had done that. If the king had come out and said, "Hey, all our forces are stranded over in France, but you know what? Just have some good thoughts and hopefully they'll come back." What if he had said, "Fasting is too hard," or, "God is going to do what he wants anyway, so why are we even bothering?" What if they hadn't prayed and fasted? For the first 1900 years of the church history, fasting was an essential part of the spiritual life of Christians in the church. You go back to any point in the last 1900 years of the church, and it was like fasting was there. It was always a part of this Christian tradition. And yet somehow in the last 100 years, we've lost this, especially in the West. It's an absolutely necessary part of prayer if you look at church history, but somehow in the modern world, we've divorced prayer from fasting. Just like Google left behind that they shouldn't be evil, we've left something that was foundational to our Christian identity behind. And I fear that by leaving it behind, by leaving behind fasting, we're abandoning seeing miracles like what happened at Dunkirk. Now, right now, we're in the middle of Lent, the weeks leading up to Easter. This is Palm Sunday. Happy Palm Sunday. And this is a traditional time for Christians to fast. In fact, some of you might be fasting. That's great. Many Christians still do. But the evangelical churches I grew up in never emphasized it. They were like, don't get on Facebook this week or something, you know. They presented it as something for the super Christians, not for ordinary folks. They're like, oh, that one guy in church, you know, he fasts. He's really super Christian, but not for us ordinary folks. We can't go without a meal, you know? Something to do if you were really desperate for God, if you were really at the end of your rope, but not something for the ordinary week. Fasting, though, appears to have been a common part of Jesus' life. In Matthew 6, verses 16 through 18, it says, this is Jesus speaking in the Sermon on the Mount, "When you fast, do not look somber as the hypocrites do, for they disfigure their faces to show others they are fasting. Truly, I tell you, they have received their full reward. But when you fast, put oil on your head and wash your face, so it will not be obvious to others that you are fasting, but only to your Father who is unseen, and your Father who sees what is done in secret will reward you." Notice, first of all, that when Jesus taught his followers here, he says, when you fast, not if you feel like fasting. You know, like, if you're like, oh, man, I just feel like doing a little bit of a fast, and Jesus is like, here's some tips for that. He said, when you fast. It was a given that following Jesus' way of life would involve rhythms of prayer and fasting. Orthodox Jews in the first century fasted every Wednesday, sun up to sundown, and any of the money that they would have normally spent on food that day, they gave to the poor. They didn't have a lot of extra money. Some historians say that the Romans were taxing them somewhere between 60 and 90% of their income. Just think about that. We got high taxes, but can you imagine 60 to 90%? That's crazy. So they had very little money to give to the poor, and so one of the ways they found more money was by fasting and praying on Wednesdays. They took the money that they would normally spend on food and gave to the poor. And Jesus wanted to make it clear that fasting should not be something that we do to earn spiritual applause for ourselves. And I think in the churches I grew up in, this is kind of what it became, because only the super Christians fasted, and they'd be like, I'm on a fast. It's a four-day fast. And you're like, well, good for you. You know, like, Jesus is saying, though, if that's all you care about is bragging about your fast, then that's your whole reward. You're getting a little bit of praise. He says we shouldn't be thinking we are some kind of super disciples for fasting. He says this is like entry-level, bottom-level, ordinary discipleship. But Jesus does say fasting does have a reward. Fasting works. It isn't just a spiritual discipline. It produces results. Jesus says that his Father, who's a good Father, will see what you do when you fast and will reward you. Just like Jesus' teachings to love our enemies, fasting is still relevant to our spirituality today. Despite the changes in time and culture, we're in a very different world. I understand that. Food security looks very differently. However, fasting still applies. In fact, almost every religion in the world practices some type of fasting. My Muslim neighbors are fasting right now for Ramadan, but followers of Buddhism and Hinduism and Taoism also fast as part of their religions. For whatever reason, every spiritual practice in the world says there is some value in going without food. Okay, so first of all, what do I mean when I say fast? Because some of you are like, I'll give up Instagram for a week. I'm going to fast for the Lord. It's going to be hard. I'm going to have some withdrawals, but I'll go without TikTok for a week, you know? No, you'll go without Instagram. You won't go without TikTok. A fast, though, is going without food for a set period of time in order to focus on the spiritual. Sometimes I hear people say, hey, I'm fasting from Facebook for Lent. I think it's great to fast from Facebook because your grandma's on there and your mom's on there. They see everything you do and they're going to comment on it. But it's not a fast. Or if you say, hey, I'm fasting from coffee for Lent. I think it's great to go without coffee, to give up something you love as an act of spiritual sacrifice. But that's not a fast. Those are abstaining from things, not fasting. Fasting is no food. That's what it means. You can abstain from other things, and that's good, but it's not a fast. Everybody okay with that? I hear that confused a lot. There can be value in abstaining from other things, but that is not how Christianity has ever defined fasting. It's always about going without food, something good, something necessary for the survival of your body in order to focus on God, someone good that you need to be in relationship with to survive. You're going without something your body needs to survive in order to get something that your whole person needs to survive, more of God. A one-day Jewish fast was usually from sunup to sundown. That's roughly from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Most Jewish people didn't fast for 24 hours. They fasted from sunup to sundown. They had very labor-intensive days, and so many of them would eat before the fast started and eat after the fast ended. And I think that's a good place for us to start. If you've never tried the practice before, get up early, make a meal before 6 a.m., go the day without food, eat again after 6 p.m. Now, let me warn you. Most people who I have introduced to fasting, who have never done a spiritual fast before, this is usually what they tell me. I tried it once. I didn't get anything out of it. I'm never doing it again. And I've heard that so much. Let me tell you, that's not how fasting works. If you expect to do it one time and be like, the heavens opened up and I saw Jesus himself descending in front of me and my whole life has been radically changed by fasting from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. one time, this one time out of my life. That's not how fasting works, and you're going to be disappointed, and you're going to be disillusioned, and you're not going to try it again. You don't go to the gym once and say, I don't feel any stronger, I'm never going back, right? You consistently go, and you see your strength increase over time. The best benefits from spiritual disciplines come from repeated habits, making it a habitual part of your life. You read the Bible one time, you're like, man, I didn't really sense God's presence. You read it repeatedly throughout your entire life, you begin to see God speak to you through the pages. You pray once and you're like, man, felt like talking to the ceiling. You fast once and you're like, wow, that was terrible. I never want to do it again. It comes from making it a habitual lifestyle that you begin to see spiritual benefits from it. And modern medical science tells us that fasting sharpens our minds. It raises our ability to sense what we are feeling internally. Do you ever, like, I have a two-year-old, and so a lot of times I can tell she's upset, and I'm like, what are you feeling? And she's like, I don't know, I'm frustrated. I was like, why are you frustrated? You know, we're like talking through and we have a book with all the feelings. And I'm like, are you angry? Are you sad? Are you hungry? And I'm like, this book's helpful for me because I don't often know what I'm feeling. You know, sometimes my wife looks at me and she's like, what's wrong? I'm like, I don't know. Something's going on inside of me, but I don't know what it is. Fasting actually, they have found, helps you figure out what you're feeling emotionally internally, helps you put words to what's going on. Fasting has shown to lower anxiety, increase your energy, but let me note this, if it becomes a reoccurring habit. The first time you fast, you will feel so low energy, and you'll be like, this is death, and I hate it. But if you make it a habitual practice, you'll actually have more energy on those days that you go without food. Many of these benefits, though, aren't felt the first few times you do it, because your body, like my body, is addicted to food, and the first few times will feel like food withdrawal. Because you're like, if you're like me, I grew up in a family when we felt sad, we ate things. And I mean, you can look at me, you can tell I've had some sadness in my life, right? I've been eating things when I feel sad. And so when you say, no, I'm not going to eat something today because I'm going to reach for God instead of reaching for food, it's going to feel like withdrawal. Until you make it a habitual practice in your life and you begin to see some of these benefits. And I mean, it feels like right now everyone's telling me about the physical benefits of intermittent fasting. Since I turned 40, I don't know what it is. I get on YouTube, every ad is either, you should be intermittent fasting, or it's for mushroom coffee. Has anybody tried mushroom coffee? No, it looks gross. I don't know. I feel like there's some conspiracy to make me drink mushroom coffee. I went to the Sherman Williams right out here in Lancaster a few weeks ago. I walked in and the guy said, you look like you could use some mushroom coffee. And I'm like, is this a hidden camera show? Like, why is everybody trying to sell me mushroom coffee? And the whole time, this worker over at Sherman Williams was trying to sell me mushroom coffee. And I'm like, I'm not buying mushroom coffee from a guy who works at Sherman Williams and sells mushroom coffee on the side, okay? Anyways, that had nothing to do with fasting, and I'm sorry. The primary role of fasting is to help us hear God's voice better and to amplify our prayers. That's why you fast. Two reasons: to hear God's voice better and to amplify our prayers. Are there physical benefits, mental health benefits? Absolutely. Those things have been proven. But we don't fast so we can like trim a little bit of weight, get our metabolism up. Those are nice side benefits. We fast so that we can hear God's voice better and to amplify our prayers. Dallas Willard said, fasting is going without food so that we can learn to feast on God. First, fasting helps us hear God's voice better. The times I have heard God's voice most clear in my life have been when I'm fasting. My wife and I fasted for multiple days about where to plant a church, where to start a church, before coming back together and both sensing God was leading us to Philadelphia. I knew for a long time that I wanted to plant a church, and we got married and we started praying together. And we said, let's take some, I felt like I was drawn to the Northeast. I was born in Pittsburgh and I wanted to come back to the Northeast area. And so we took all these cities in the Northeast. We both took some days to pray and fast separately. We didn't want to influence each other. And we both came back with a little piece of paper that said Philadelphia on it. Why did I feel so clearly that that was the case? I had never been to Philadelphia. I've been to just about every city in Pennsylvania except Philadelphia. But we were praying about Boston. Boston's so cool. We were praying about New York City. We were praying about places like Maine and Vermont, New England, places that I really think are cool. We were praying about D.C. and all these cool cities. But I came back to Philadelphia because I felt that when I fasted for multiple days and prayed, I had the clear sense that God was saying, you need to come to the Philadelphia area. And my wife heard the same voice. The hardest thing for me, though, is the second half of fasting, how it amplifies our prayers. What does that mean? I understand the physiological things it does to our bodies. Science helps me understand that. I understand even how those changes can better help us hear the whisper of God. Somehow going without food like intunes us better to hear God's voice. I felt that, I experienced that. But throughout church history, Christians have also held that fasting amplifies our prayers somehow. In Matthew 17, 21 and in Mark 9, 29, Jesus says to his disciples, this kind can come out only by prayer and fasting. According to Jesus, there are some spiritual strongholds that only shift when we fast and pray. Now, why would that be? Like, isn't that weird? Like, why would going without food make my prayers more powerful? There's a real mystery here. Like, throughout church history, Christians haven't had, like, oh, I got this figured out. This is why going without food makes your prayers more powerful. Demons are just, like, super weak and falling all over the place. But as soon as you go without food, and we don't know. There's a mystery there. Fasting doesn't twist God's arm. It's not like God's like, hey, I'm going to do this. And Michael the Archangel's like, no, no, no. Didn't you see? They fasted. You can't do that. You got to do what they want. And God's like, oh, man, they fasted. I got to change my whole direction. No, that's not how it works. I mean, God isn't having his arm bent behind his back when we fast. That doesn't make us get what we want. So what does it mean that it amplifies our prayers? There's a real mystery here. Robert Mulholland says the essence of fasting is the separation of ourselves from something in order to offer ourselves in greater measure to God. One of the main purposes of fasting is to wean ourselves from our dependence on God's gifts and enable us to become dependent on God alone. A lot of us love God because of his gifts. We don't love him for who he is. A lot of us keep going because of what he's given us, not because of who he is. And fasting is one way to say, you've given me so much. I don't go without food. Like, our cupboards are full. I always have enough to go and buy more. I haven't been hungry. God has always provided for me. And I'm setting aside that gift and saying, you know what? Thank you for what you've given me, but I want to learn to want you more than just what you give me. Somehow when we are physically weak, our spiritual strength and power and influence are increased. Our prayers somehow tap into the graciousness, the grace flowing, the graciously flowing love of God more easily when we fast. 2 Corinthians 12, verses 9 through 10, the Apostle Paul says, but God said to me, my grace is sufficient for you. My power is made perfect in weakness. Therefore, I will boast all the more gladly about my weakness so that Christ's power may rest on me. And that is why, for Christ's sake, I delight in weakness. I don't delight in weakness. I like having plenty of resources. I like being well prepared. I like having all the strengths and the gifts and, like, not having to be desperate and rely on anybody else, let alone rely on God. But fasting starves our selfish desire to have what we want when we want it and how we want it, and it gives us a hunger for a feast that is communion with God. Somehow in that weakness, we can experience the grace of God empowering what we ask for and making us more like Jesus. And you say, so Alex, explain it to me. Why does going without food make our prayers somehow more amplified? I don't know. And nobody throughout church history has been able to tell us. But over and over again, we see that when God's people pray and fast, heaven moves on earth. I think there's something about feeling strong that makes us rely on our abilities and our resources and ignore the supernatural power available from God. There's something that a mentor told me once, and he said, when you feel most capable, when you feel most prepared, when you feel like you've got this figured out and you can do it on your own, that's the most dangerous time to be a minister. And I've tried to remember that. Because there's a lot of moments where I was rocking a kid all night as we watched Bluey at 1 a.m., you know, after she's been throwing up. And I'm like, tomorrow's going to be difficult as I stand up there to preach. And I remembered, oh, yeah, you're preaching about being weak and in the midst of weakness, God's power working through you. And I'm like, oh, yeah, I'm having to live this thing out. Okay, it's going to be okay. Many times we want everything to work out and be perfectly planned and prepared, and I love that. I'm a little bit of a control freak. I want everything to go right. And we need to fast to remind ourselves that any strength we have is a gift from God, and His strength is greater than any strength we can muster in ourselves. So each week in this series on prayer, we have homework. Because it's really easy to hear about prayer and be like, I love prayer and never pray, or read books on prayer, or preach sermons on prayer and not pray. We need prayer to move from a theological idea into a real life, everyday practice. And so each week we've been ending with some homework to do. I hope you've been doing that. I hope that it's been helpful and maybe opened you up to new ideas about prayer. And so today I want to end with our homework, which is to call our church to fast and pray this Wednesday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. Now, before I go any farther, I know some of you watching online, you're nursing babies, or some of you might be diabetic, or you have other health things going on, and you're like, Alex, I can't fast. Like, literally, it could kill me if I've... Just use your common sense here. I'm not, like, asking you to do something that's going to kill you or make your baby starve. Use your common sense. You're wise, intelligent people. But if you can, if you don't have any real excuses not to, I invite you to go from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. on Wednesday. If you're like, oh, man, I have this thing at work. I'm going to have to run a marathon. Then eat. You know, use your common sense. Pick a different day. If you can't do it, that's okay. Do what you can. But I want to call you, if you can, on Wednesday from 6 a.m. to 6 p.m. to go without food, to pray for our church, to pray for our country, and to pray for our world. Here's just some things I suggest that we pray for. As you pray for our church, pray that we would see healthy growth to allow us to continue to operate in this community for years to come. Pray that we would recruit leaders from within and without to help me as I lead. Pray that we would see people decide to become students of how Jesus lived and loved and be baptized. For our country, I pray that, I suggest that you pray that we would have a unity in our country that would unite us and not divide us. The people who call themselves Christians would become disciples. They would actually live and love like Jesus did. And for our world, can we just pray that wars, there are so many wars happening and brewing and so many lives being lost. Can we pray for those to end? And you say, Alex, what good is that going to do? I don't know. Throughout history, when people prayed and fasted, somehow it mattered. Somehow it did something. You say, what is me whispering words over here on the other side of the world going to do over there? I don't know, but when people in Britain prayed and fasted, it changed the weather, it changed military strategy, it saved 340,000 lives. Prayer and fasting work. Let's pray and fast. Let's pray together as we end today. Lord